This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with Siobhan Scott on this segment, psychotherapist and author. We're going to talk about the Alec Murdaugh case, take a little deeper look into what's caused this to happen, if indeed it did happen, and if indeed he is the alleged killer. What I want to ask you, Siobhan, is could this have taken place in some way, shape, or form where Alec did it, but he has zero recollection of it actually happening?
Yeah, there is absolutely no way that he was in some kind of dissociative state and doesn't remember. OxyContin does not cause that. You know, if people take so much Oxy, they pass out, then that's possible, you know, because if he were passed out, he would be close to comatose and barely breathing.
Sure.
So this is just not a drug that causes that. There are other kinds of, you know, unusual medications. Ambien has, you know, been alluded to that, although I think that's even questionable that people may have some dissociative states where they don't remember things. But absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think if you've ever worked in substance abuse treatment, you just had to roll your eyes on that one.
And the reason I'm coming to that, and I'm not even blaming it on drugs. It's not even the angle that I'm really thinking of it in. It's more so a personal angle for me, having gone through a situation with an individual at one point in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was a combination of a lot of things where this person seemed to, you know, really have a break. And in the Alec case, I can almost kind of see that, where all of the stress of the workplace, of him being caught on the financial crimes and everything crumbling down around him, his son, who I know they tried to paint as a saint in court, was really for the most part a shitty human being as well. And all of that, that's tarnishing the reputation. The rumors of Maggie, you know, kind of getting really sick of this, ready to leave and run away. It was a lot. It was a lot. And I'm just wondering, was there some sort of triggering event where he just snapped, thought that the only way out, because it was some sort of delusional thinking. That's what I dealt with an individual. That's how they were thinking. It was very deluded, made no sense at all. It was nothing this person would do in their right mind. And that they acted out. And the claim that I'd heard and what many therapists had talked to me about was that, yeah, sometimes they just don't remember these sort of things. The event was not something that they had any recollection of.
You know, if you are in a very, very heightened state of emotion and you have a particular kind of personality type, I can see perhaps, but he certainly knew how to get in his vehicle, knew the way to get to his mother's residence, had no sense of being disoriented at his mother. He can completely recall what he did there.
True.
He behaved normally, completely normally, when he got there. He has detailed memories of laying down on the bed next to his mother, trying to comfort her. So I just can't say clinically that it would add up. You know, if he had been in a severe dissociative state to the point he couldn't remember and couldn't control what he was doing, that would have continued. And in this case, he clearly, that did not continue. He had this, you know, shift to behaving very normally. So it just doesn't fit. That one I just don't buy at all.
It's interesting because that's where I was running correlations and kind of going, oh, I mean, I can kind of understand that. Is it true that if someone is in that sort of dissociative state, is that sometimes more of an excuse than it is truly reality that someone is not really there?
100%. Because folks with personality disorders are adept at telling stories and excuse making. Yeah. And he has proven a lifelong pattern of this storytelling. I mean, do we ever get the truth from him? He's such an adept liar. It's actually jaw-dropping how well he lies to his beloved brother, his best friend, all the people that he worked with and was supposedly so bonded with. This guy is self-serving, and there's no doubt that, you know, telling the truth is not a gift that he has.
And it seems that the only times that the truth comes out, we haven't seen anything with the financial matters where he just volunteered and said, I screwed up here. I owe you this money. This was not correct. It's always only when he gets caught.
Only when he gets caught. And that is classic psychopath behavior. So that's personality. You know, the thing that really struck me is he's claiming he was spending $50,000 a week on OxyContin.
Yeah.
This is not possible. You know, enough OxyContin to spend 50 grand a week would kill several elephants. You know, no human can develop a tolerance to that amount of Oxy. He would have been dead, you know, far before that point. So we have to wonder, where exactly did the money go? I think there's more to the story, and he's not yet disclosing it. And, you know, is this, people are speculating, which I think is, you know, something I hope law enforcement is looking into or has looked into. Is he involved in some, you know, operation with a cartel? Did he get into trouble somehow with that? Did someone else commit the murders, but he knows who it is, but he's not going to tell because, you know, he's in danger. You know, this just has the sense that there's more going on. And this guy is adept at covering his tracks and lying to everyone. He's also claiming in one of the interviews that, or on the stand, he actually said as well, that he has done so much lying to the police because he was paranoid, and this was caused by the OxyContin. You know, the drug that causes clinical paranoia is methamphetamine. And I have seen it many times. People with meth become delusionally paranoid and will do really bizarre, extreme things. There was no evidence in his interviews right after the event or subsequently that he had clinical paranoia. Now, was he worried about getting caught? Sure, he was worried that, you know, to disclose that he had this drug addiction, but he certainly did not have any signs of clinical paranoia. And so, again, he can't tell the truth. And it's to such an extreme degree, this has really hurt him in this case. If he's not guilty, which we've agreed it's possible he's not guilty, then at some point you've got to stop the lying because it just works against you.
I guess I was shocked. I mean, I know he's a compulsive liar here, probably something well beyond that even, but I was very surprised to hear him come out and say immediately, look, I lied. I lied to the SLED investigators, like right off the bat, and then lied about why he lied to the SLED investigators.
Right. Saying right. He lies about why he lies.
Yes. And it's like, oh, the twisted web we weave. Yes, you're still doing it right now.
Exactly. And that is, you know, out of all the strange behavior from this man, that is the thing that is so consistent. And it's such a long-term problem. This is personality disorder.
Yeah.
And that makes us question everything. So it's self-defeating.
With someone who is like this, is there any way to correct them, or is this just so ingrained in them that they really don't see anything wrong with it? There's nothing that really hurts them or you know, triggers them to pull it back and not do this sort of behavior and exhibit this and pull all your family through it as well. It's just shocking to the rest of us who don't do that, that one would continue to do it. But I'm assuming there's something there that doesn't allow them to ever correct the behavior.
Yeah, at this age, I don't see any hope that he could actually change this behavior. He only comes clean when he's been caught and there's, you know, complete proof that he's lied. And I think even then, as you say, he lies about lying. And this is just, you know, it's not a mental illness that happened to him. This is his personality. And this clearly formed early on in life. And this is just who he is.
It makes me wonder if he is found guilty, because that's a form of being caught in the act. Is are we going to hear a confession if, in fact, he did do this and they do find him guilty? Or will he remain steadfast in this forever, that he's innocent in this? Or is that going to be enough to go, yep, I did it, and then just kind of keep going on with life like everything's okay?
Yeah, I would be surprised if he would ever admit it, because I think he's very invested in this, painting a picture of this image of himself and, you know, his boys as being just wonderful people. Everyone was wonderful. His relationship with his wife was wonderful. And, you know, there's certainly enough to question that. Was it wonderful on her end? So I don't think we'll ever get the truth out of him.
I mean, that was always very interesting to me. I mean, obviously, when you're on the stand and you're talking about your dead son, you're probably not going to go up there and be like, yeah, he abused his girlfriend. He was cocky as hell after the boat crash and was laughing. And Mallory's dead over there in the water. Then he's suspected of possibly being involved in killing that gay kid with his other brother over there. It's like, oh, he's wonderful. He's just loved the outdoors and this or that. This is such a toxic family, it seems. It's scary to think about how they all functioned together. But was that just it? It was a toxic soup and everybody had a piece in the recipe. So nobody ever noticed how toxic it was.
Yeah, I think you put that beautifully, because the other thing that has leaped out at me is that even though Alec had the opioid addiction going, they were all alcoholic. You know, when you look at the different videos of their parties and the amount of drinking they were doing, Paul was clearly an alcoholic. Uh-huh. I mean, classic alcoholic behavior. And the boat crash would never have happened if Paul had not been immersed and flooding himself with alcohol that night to a point that was bizarre and strange. And he was scaring the other kids. He was very likely in a blackout. But even after Mallory was missing, and it was in all likelihood apparent that she was dead, he was laughing. Yeah. You know, so this is alcoholism. And there was never any mention of, gee, we need to get our kid into rehab here. Because I think it was normal in the family.
And it was such bizarre behavior on Paul's behalf. I mean, I think most of us can, you know, remember times or two or many where we've had too much to drink, but I can't ever see myself being in a state of like, oh my God, somebody's dead and I'm going to laugh about it. That was just very, very bizarre behavior. Obviously, Paul was self-medicating to deal with something. I guess I just wonder what that something was. Can you speculate on that?
You know, it may have just been, as we talk about, you know, the community has a culture, families have a culture. And the culture in this family was, we have fun when we're drunk. Yeah. And there was one video of the recording of Alec talking to Buster after he was in jail. And Alec was laughing in memories of Maggie talking about, remember how fun she was when she was drunk. And that just struck me again. That's a bizarre thing. It's like something that was normal in the family. The kids were drinking underage. There were just copious amounts of alcohol in everything they did. So it really may not have been a trauma of any kind in Paul's life. It may have just been, this is established very early on. This is how we party. This is how we have fun. And kids can grow up in that environment and it just is normal to them, and at a terrible cost.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Siobhan Scott, she's going to be with us for another segment here in just a bit, and we'll dive a little bit deeper into the world of Paul Murdoch and what he was, you know, drinking to escape from, if anything. I'm interested to hear Siobhan's thoughts on that. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our conversations on the cases that we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.